Your first time? One good reason. Tom looked around, then lowered his voice. I am pure as a newborn babe. You're shitting me. I shit you not. Liana's saving herself for marriage. Think Kat wasn't? Tom leaned on his elbow. You didn't force Caitlin or anything. Course not. Just let her know she wasn't the only girl around. I reached for Tom's Panama Jack, glancing at Caitlin. Her eyes were closed, her face motionless. You can't be so whipped. You have to call the shots. Tom sat up. I just heard that. Who you calling whipped? A guy who's whipped. Tom was on me. I put up a fight, yelling, You trying to get some from me because you can't get it anywhere else? No one stirred. We fought harder like we used to fight when we were kids. He pinned my arms. He was laughing, but I could tell he was a little serious, too. Am I still whipped? He yelled. Like cream, which incidentally is... I didn't finish. He pulled me up and dragged me to the side of the boat. Still? I nodded. He hoisted me onto the rail. I kicked him a few times before I stopped struggling and grinned at him. You know, this is interesting, I said. I read somewhere that purity brings superhuman strength. Asshole. Tom pushed me into the ocean. I fell head on and got a throatful of salt water. When I surfaced, spitting out the ocean, my first words were, Still whipped. Tom jumped almost on top of me with a splash that should have awakened everyone. We both treaded water a minute. He said, You know, I'm glad you were first. You had so much more to prove. March 29, 10:30 p.m., my desk, third straight hour. Teammates. Whistles shrill high. Let the skirmish begin. Bodies colliding. Sun stings my naked eyeballs. Fainting, then attacking, they struggle to win. But I'm on the sidelines, apart from the crowd. Your eyes meet mine and see only reflection. Your legs piston, powerful, a hero once more. And I stand alone, drenched in sweat and untold secrets, but slapping your hand, saying everything's fine. I stare at the lines my hands, apparently incommunicado with my brain, have typed. I'm screwed if I turn this in. Football seemed like a safe topic. I chose blank verse because my mind was equally blank. At least I thought it was. But I ended up writing about Tom. Things I hadn't even thought I'd thought. An hour later, the poem's still in my face. My brain is an abyss. I try, but the only images I can channel are of Caitlin. Caitlin dancing on Duval Street. Caitlin's hands fanning green waters. Caitlin swimming in the moonlight. I blame the journal. It's become my torment and my salvation. The cable that binds me to the past by being my sole reality. And somehow, when I see it on paper, it becomes more real than when it's just in my head. I should stop writing. Mario doesn't look at it, and it makes me think pointless thoughts, wonder if things could have been different. With Kat? With Tom, even? If I told Tom how it was at home, would it have changed anything? He was my best friend. Could he have helped? No. He'd have laughed at me. I shove the poem into my backpack and take out my journal. I'm back with Caitlin. Except I don't want to be where I'm going now. The road north was straight and long. The mangroves surrounding it stank like stale beer. Kat and I were alone. Me memorizing the license number ahead, an out-of-state tag that said, Fishin'. Caitlin, wearing sunglasses, eyeing the 5 o'clock sky. Why was she so relaxed? She wasn't stuck driving, that's why. Wasn't driving down this two-lane road behind Fishin', who traveled below the speed limit. Jesus Christ, I sped up, almost tapping his bumper. Kat opened her mouth and shut it. Good choice. One-word signs lined the road. Patience pays. Only 2 miles to passing zone. I had no patience. 2 miles took 5 minutes because of Fishin'. Finally, we hit the passing zone, and I gunned past 5 cars, barely slipping in front of the last. We were near the 7-mile bridge. I could see water ahead. Caitlin stirred beside me, fiddling with her sunglasses. Finally, she said, Nick, we need to talk. About what? She moved away. About Friday on Duval Street. How you were drinking, how you acted. I clutched the wheel. Friday was pretty much a blur, although Tom and Dane had reamed me for getting us thrown out of that bar. how I acted. Nick, you know I love you, but sometimes you act like someone else. Caitlin looked away. I stared forward, but my heart was ramming into my ribs. Did she want to break up? Sometimes you're not nice to me, she concluded. Not nice, huh? I said. She could not leave me. Kat turned toward the window. Sometimes it's like you don't trust me, she said. She was trying to break up. Who was it? Saint? Maybe even Zack? My tires met the bridge, two lanes suspended between sky and water, the ultimate no-passing zone. Only an occasional car drove the left lane, but visibility sucked. Sun turned water tangerine. Caitlin fidgeted. I said, you don't trust me. I heard you. I'm deciding how to respond. She could not leave me. As I hit the word respond, I pulled to the left, veering into the southbound lane. Then I floored it past three cars. A southbound Volvo station wagon slammed its brakes within yards of us. The driver was honking, yelling. I pulled back into the northbound lane and flipped him off. I looked at Caitlin. Her mouth hung in mid-scream. I laughed. Do you trust me, Kat? She was silent. I leaned closer. Did I ever tell you about my mother? Caitlin recovered enough to shake her head no, and I said, I was 4, 5. I'd lie awake nights, listening to her and my dad fighting, him hitting her. I looked at Caitlin. You want to hear this? She nodded. I thought we'd pack up and leave someday, her and I. I lived for that day. On the wheel, my knuckles were white. Then, one morning, I wake up, and she's gone. Never came back. She ran from the monster and left me there with him. Caitlin removed her sunglasses. I'm sorry, Nick. So, you talk about trust. It's pretty important. I mean, when the one person you trust just picks up and leaves. Caitlin's hand slipped across my shoulder. I tried to shrug her off, swerving left into traffic, then back. Terror filled Caitlin's eyes. Her nails ripped my flesh. Trust me, Kat? She could not leave me. I swerved again. Because if you haven't figured it out, life doesn't mean much to me. Without you, it's worthless. A flock of seagulls headed across my windshield. She could not leave me. I swerved again, this time counting three before I veered back. She could not leave me. Caitlin screamed at me to stop. What's the matter? When she didn't answer, I swerved again. Oh, this! Maybe you're right. I straightened the wheel, looking beyond her to the orange and green water east of the bridge. Silence. I didn't swerve. Nothing. We were halfway across. Caitlin relaxed. Suddenly I said, Think I can make a right here? Right was into the water. I made like I'd do it, crashed through the guardrail, then down. Caitlin screamed. She grabbed for the wheel. I shoved her away so her fingers clawed the air. She tried again, gripping both my hands. The car swerved left into the path of a Bronco towing a boat. I pulled it back. My mind knew what she was doing, but my eyes didn't. I couldn't see her. She was shrieking. God, shut up! Her voice deafened me, and it was all around in my ears, making me lose all control. She tried to grab the wheel. Blind and deaf, I drove, sun hot on my face. I had to get her off me. God, I just had to get her off me. Get her off me. Get off me. Get off! Next thing I knew, I was driving on land. I couldn't tell you whether it was minutes or hours later. Caitlin hung across the seat, head cradled in her fingers. My hand throbbed, and I knew I'd hit her. I'd hit her. I was tired. She'd worn me out. But the anger inside me dissolved, replaced by that regret. But I'd had to stop her. She'd been irrational, overwrought, shouldn't have touched the wheel. She could have killed us. I looked at her. The seat was the length of a football field. Caitlin faced the window. She was so beautiful. Ahead was a red pickup with a Jesus fish. It was going at a good clip, but when we reached the next passing zone, I overtook it and a few other cars. Kat stiffened. I merged back into traffic and reached to stroke her hair. She lifted her head, cautious as a runner stealing home, and stared. Are you all right, Caitlin? I asked. When she didn't answer, I repeated the question. She shook her head. You hit me. I told her no, I hadn't. I mean, She was grabbing the wheel. We'd almost creamed the Bronco. I had to get her off me before we got killed. "Because you were driving off the bridge," she said. I laughed and said she knew me better. I was just screwing around, like when we kidnapped them from Jessica's. I'd never do it for real. Besides, we'd have crashed the guardrail and I'd have gotten killed for wrecking the car.
"But you hit me, Nick."
She leaned out the window toward the side view mirror to see if her cheek was getting red. And it was. I didn't expect it to be red, but it was. A little. I hadn't hit her hard, just enough to get her off me. I said, "Don't you know you shouldn't grab the wheel when someone's driving?"
"But I thought..."
She was pretty shaken. Mad, maybe? I pulled her close. "Sorry I freaked you out, kitty cat. I forget you aren't used to guys. You don't know we play rough sometimes." She kept protesting, and I said, "You know what I was thinking? I wanted to buy you a ring. You know, like a symbol, since we're going together. What's your birthstone?" Still, she stared like her life was flashing before her eyes.
"You hit me, Nick."
I kissed her. She drew away, and I pulled her back. "Your birthday's in February, right? I'll ask the jeweler what the stone is." I held her close until she stopped struggling. The sun was down, but it wasn't dark enough for a moon, and we crossed bridges connecting the islands. Big Pine Key, Plantation Key, Key Largo. Then we drove through mainland Miami a while. When we reached home, the sky above Rickenbacker Causeway was black, and Caitlin slept on my shoulder. March 30, 8 a.m., Miss Higgins' classroom. "I want to be Ludwig when I grow up. I admire Beethoven's musical flair, and won't mind when children sneer in disgust at my pickled expression, gorgon hair." The opening quatrain of a sonnet by Derek Wayne. Higgins slumps in her wheelchair. Me, I'm freaking. I heard nothing about reading these poems aloud. No way can I read this. No way. Derek whines to a close. Wish he'd written something longer. And Elsa volunteers.
"Mine's a haiku, Miss Higgins," Elsa says in her most self-important voice. "It's called Unseen Violence."
She reads,
"The dragon's lurking, hidden behind eyes of green, at a desk so near." My blood jumps like a fumbled ball. People have been leaving me alone lately, but by syllable 12 of Elsa's poem, every eye meets mine. God, I hate her. I glance sideways, let my eyes sear into hers. She smirks. I remind myself to breathe. Higgins looks from Elsa to me, then back.
"See me after class, Elsa."
She turns to me.
"We may as well have yours, Nicholas.
Call on someone else."
"I'm calling on you."
"I can't read mine." Snickers. Higgins' horseshoe-shaped eyebrows rise still higher. Shock treatment.
"You didn't do the assignment?"
"Dog ate his homework," Elsa whispers. I look at Higgins. "I did it, I just can't read it here." Elsa's stuffing knuckles into her oversized mouth. "It's personal."
"All creative writing is personal, Nicholas."
"My poem's not about Beethoven or dragons," I manage a sneer at Elsa. "I didn't hear you say we had to read it." Higgins tenses her fingers, sizing me up, and for a second, I think she'll cut me a break. No such luck. "If you didn't complete the assignment, I'm afraid I'll have to..."
"Give me an F?"
I say, "Fine." My forehead is tight. I do not want an F. An F is irreparable. With an F, my final grade will be a B, something I've never gotten in English, and my father will freak. But that's in the future. Right now, there's only slow death by humiliation if I read. After class, I wait. I consider begging Higgins to let me write something else, but Elsa's at her desk. Words like self-control, appropriate, propriety slither from Higgins' lips, and Elsa nods, saying she had no idea we'd be reading aloud. Still, when she faces me, she's smiling.
"Was your poem about Caitlin?" she whispers, passing my desk.
"No, about you. I couldn't read it because it was pornographic. All my wet dreams about your non-existent tits and bony elbows."
"Pig."
Elsa pulls her books to her chest. "By the way, Caitlin's hot and heavy with some football player."
"Thanks, I knew that."
But hearing it makes me long to do something.
long to tell or show or make Caitlin know I'm the one for her. I wait for Elsa to leave, then start for the door.
Nicholas?
I turn to face Miss Higgins.
Didn't you do the assignment? She asks.
I try to smile. Don't I always? I pull the paper from my notebook. Her whitish eyes take me in.
Yes, you're a good student. I hate to ruin a perfect transcript, but I believe reading aloud is essential to writing. Following instructions is up there, too.
Why wouldn't you read?
I'll write something else and read it tomorrow.
You must have expected me to see it.
I hold the paper out with my good student smile.
You can see it. I drop it onto her desk and walk out. When I enter the hall, a fist rams my face.
Leave her alone.
The journal.
Caitlin's gone, Nick.
Mrs. McCourt's lacy red negligee left little to the imagination, and her feather-slippered feet sported crimson toenails. I wondered whether she put on fresh polish for bed. I was so busy gaping, I barely heard her. I think I managed...
Huh?
Caitlin left. I thought she was with you. Mrs. McCourt threw open the door, waving her hand in what was probably meant as an inviting gesture. She offered me a muffin. But I was out of there before you could say magic crystal.
Why did Caitlin leave?
I always drove her to school. I jumped into the car, not opening the door. A block later, I saw Caitlin, looking lonely in white pants and a green linen shirt. I pulled beside her. She turned. Her face looked different, almost out of line. Then I realized it was her makeup, heavier than usual. It still didn't cover the red mark under her eye. My breath quickened. I'd done that. How? I'd barely touched her. Her eyes met mine. She said, "I can't see you anymore, Nick." I followed, cruising at idle speed.
Why?
She kept walking.
Why? Because you hit me, Nick. You hit me. You practically kill us driving home in the wrong lane. Then you hit me. Does any of this ring a bell?
She crossed the sidewalk and started walking in people's yards. I ditched the car to run after her. In a few steps, I lost my breath. Impossible. I ran miles at football practice, but Caitlin's words knocked the wind out of me. God, it was a slap, barely a mark, yet I was helpless to the point of desperation. I put my hands on her shoulders, and she recoiled like I'd hit her again. I begged her to give me another chance, but she said, "No, I can't take it. I can't be with someone who hurts me." She broke into a run, and I chased her like an asshole. I was an asshole. We were near school. The traffic jam had started. Heads whirled at the awesome sight of Nick Andreas chasing the homecoming princess down the street. I barely noticed. I was too busy begging for another chance, telling her what a scum I was. It was all my fault. I was as close to bawling as I get, bawling about what a loser I was and how I'd do anything to make it up to her. Anything. She stopped at the parking lot entrance, and cars worked around her.
"I'm sorry, Nick.
But you said you loved me. Is that something you turn on and off?"
"I just can't be with you. If you love me, I can change."
Caitlin said she wished she could believe that. Then she turned and started toward the oak tree where our group met every morning. She said she wouldn't tell anyone what happened.
Why was she doing this?
I wanted to run, throw myself at her feet, or maybe grab her shoulders and shake her until she begged me to stop. But she stood by Saint, their bodies perfect as puzzle pieces. I was the one who didn't fit. I trudged to my car. One thing was sure. I'd do anything to get her back. March 30. My bedroom. The mirror reveals the only black eye I've gotten from anyone but my father. This one's courtesy of Saint. And Tom. Tom was with him. They'd ambushed me coming from English class. After the punch, Saint grabbed my arms and held them behind my back.
"Leave her alone!" Saint yelled.
I didn't struggle, just looked at him.
"What do you mean?"
I said, my father's face taking over, his cool eyes appraising Saint's fiery ones. I'd seen that face enough to be able to put it on and off. I hated myself for it.
"You know damn well, stop calling her, stop talking to her in the halls, stop leaving little presents in her locker."
He shook me with every sentence.
"She's not interested, okay?"
"Who's not?" I said, cool as he was hot.
"Caitlin?
I'm not allowed to talk to Caitlin."
"Don't screw with me." We both know you do, and I don't need a court order to kick your ass.
He shoved me against a locker.
Consider this a preview.
Come on, Nick, Tom pleaded with me. Just lay off. I glared at him. You're not speaking to me, so shut up. I pulled from Saint's grip, and you're just pissed I got there first. As I walked away, Saint yelled,
By the way, thanks for the roses. I told her I bought them.
Now I pull the photograph of Tom and me off the mirror. I look at it a second before I rip it unrecognizable. The Journal. I'd been camped on Caitlin's doorstep since 2. After a morning spent on the beach paging her over and over on my cell phone, she didn't answer, and there was nowhere else I could think.